cinnamon.
She's not like anyone else. You wonder why she captured you like a firefly and makes you shine like you never could alone.
Hey everybody, welcome to Drive Through HR, Brian, William, and Nisha, coming to you every day, Brian and Nisha today, and we are going to have an amazing conversation, one of my fave people in the HR space, just lots and lots of fun, and really knows her stuff. So first of all, Nisha, happy Friday, how are you doing?
Happy Friday to you, Brian, and everybody. Well, it's an interesting day for me, a great climate in Dallas, and I can't wait to enjoy my weekend.
Well, that is perfect. I am in lovely Norman, Oklahoma. Couldn't be like a more like dangerous place to be in the spring. Obviously, it's tornado ground zero, but it's a nice gray day, so no tornadoes. That's a good thing here. I'm actually here for a planning meeting for the Oklahoma State HR Conference, just to give them a little shout-out, OKHR. So lots of good people, lots of good practitioners volunteering their time. So just a quick one there. And let's get to our guest, because I think she's definitely going to improve the world in the next 28 minutes. So no pressure. Lolly Reese, welcome back to Drive Through HR.
Well, thank you for having me. I feel like Brian, you, myself, and Nisha are very close in proximity. I had a chance to have coffee with Nisha earlier last week, and she and I are a stone's throw away. So we're all very close, and you know, there are far worse places to be than Norman, Oklahoma. That's for sure.
Yeah, that is a true statement, to say the least. Well, hey, if you would, let's kick it off, introduce yourself to our millions of listeners, and then we'll roll into what's top of mind for you.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for having me. My name is Elizabeth Lolly Reese. I go by Lolly, and I run a blog about HR and my HR practices. It's txstrategichr.com. You can find me on Twitter as well at TX Strategic HR. I am a director of HR for a Fortune 500 company that works in technology and electronics, and I have been in HR now for, almost 14 years. I came into HR on recruiting and staffing side. I obtained my law degree back in 2005, and now I am a generalist in every sense of the word, and truly enjoy the innovation and the exciting things that are coming that are coming through in HR, and the fact that just in my fairly short time in being an HR practitioner, really seeing HR professionals being seen as more strategic than tactical and getting away from that personnel label. So I'm passionate about HR. I'm passionate about what I do, and I'm excited to be here.
Well, cool. Go ahead, Nisha.
Oh, you go ahead, Brian.
Well, hey, so you got, you were dug in, right? You got a big company. So what is top of mind and keeping you up at night currently with NHR?
So I think my organization and many organizations that I've worked with in the past have had the baby boomers and a very large portion of the employee population as well as the leadership team are baby boomers, which would make sense because when you look at the percentage of the population that the baby boomers make up. But as many baby boomers are starting to announce their intentions to retire or start retiring, the training and the knowledge gap is starting to become more and more obvious in how we're going to fill the knowledge and training gaps, and do we have the right people? Are we setting ourselves up to fail by keeping baby boomers in the top spots until they decide to leave, and then, you know, we're trying to plug Gen X and Gen Yers in that maybe don't have the boardroom experience? So something that keeps me up at night, and something that, you know, you can look at the demographics of your own organization and creates a lot of interesting conversations when you look at the what could happen in the next 5 to 10 years for your organization.
Well, that's an interesting topic. So what kind of a trend do you see at the current workforce where the baby boomers are about to quit, and what do you think, how can we retain them?
So I think back in 2008, when I think the effects of the recession really were starting to hit all of us in a very practical way, it was obviously a very bad thing, but it was almost kind of a good thing for many organizations, because many baby boomers felt like, because the market had crashed and because they felt like the market was uncertain, that they stayed with organizations and made plans to stay with organizations maybe longer than they would have hoped. You know, maybe somebody who's deciding they'll work 65 and beyond, or someone who's 65 deciding to continue to work until the economy got better. And now, as we see, you know, just in the past few weeks, the market's higher than it's been since pre-recession times, and, you know, people's 401ks are bounced back. I and my fellow HR professionals out in the world are starting to get a lot more resignations based on retirement. And, you know, I think for many organizations, you know, being able to retain that talent for a few more years was very, very helpful and really comforting. But now that the reality is really staring us all in the face, that we're going to lose really top-notch talent that has, you know, 20-plus years in the boardroom, most organizations haven't really prepared for that. And I think succession planning has been one of the last things on everyone's list when it was, for many organizations, just trying to keep the doors open.
That's a great thought, Lolly. And one of the major things that I noticed is, like, you know, employers, they wait till they receive a resignation letter from their employees to promote them. So how important, you know, finding the talent in your employees and then proactively, you know, plan for succession planning and then proactively retain them. How important is that in our current work culture?
You know, I think that's a great question, and I think that right now, if you're an HR professional, the succession planning and figuring out a game plan for the next, you know, probably 1 to 3 years should be what you're focusing on a daily basis, because, you know, also, so because so many organizations did reduce the number of employees and have multiple layoffs, the bench strength isn't as deep as it used to be. So where maybe in 2007 you've got a CFO and you may have 5 really strong VPs or directors on the bench that may be able to come in and take that role with a little bit of additional training and coaching, you may only have 2. And, you know, odds are that the 1 out of 2 may also be a baby boomer and getting close to retirement. So, you know, really sitting down and having open, honest, and frank conversations about who we're at risk of losing, why we're at risk of losing them. Is it because they're going to retire, or is it because they haven't had a promotion in 5 years or a raise in 5 years? Having those very honest and sometimes uncomfortable conversations, and then figuring out, you know, if this person, God forbid, was hit by a bus tomorrow, how would we get their job done? How would we backfill them? Is there anybody there? And if there's not, do we develop someone, or do we start looking externally? So to me, that's something that we should all be very focused on, because, you know, when the baby boomers start retiring in droves, it's going to affect all of us, and it's going to be much harder to poach talent from other organizations. And, you know, I know a lot of people are tired of hearing the phrase war for talent, but 5 years from now, I truly see that being where many organizations are, is in a war for talent.
So what are your thoughts on
Go ahead, Nisha.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts on bridging the talent gap with a new generation?
Well, I think that for 20 years, 20 plus years, many organizations have been run by baby boomers with baby boomer ideals, ideas of how business should be run, ideas about what a company should look like and feel like and sound like. And I think to be able to really bridge the gap between baby boomers and Gen X or Gen Y, we're going to really have to start looking at what does work look like and what is it going to look like in the future. You know, I know that companies like Yahoo and Best Buy have gotten rid of many of their work-from-home programs, and, you know, I think that probably impacts Gen X and Gen Y and even millennials far more than it does the baby boomers, because many of these employees, that's all they know is a very lenient telecommuting or work-from-home policy. So I think kind of counter to what's been going on at Yahoo and at Best Buy, really going towards policies and practices that are more Gen X, Y, and millennial friendly to attract top candidates is going to be very important. So like the definition of insanity, doing the same things over and over and expecting the same results and getting the same results. I think that with the with the start of the baby boomers to start retiring in droves, re-identifying and redefining what a company looks like and how it runs is going to be really essential.
Hey, just real quick on just to jump in, I just want to say, just for everybody literally in the Silicon Valley, I'm sure they are sending flowers and good wishes to Yahoo for completely rolling back their telework processes, because that, talk about a war for talent, and you kind of like shoot completely in the opposite direction. That just to me makes absolutely no sense from like a key person on your overall people strategy, where they can line that out. I still haven't reconciled that intellectually. Totally. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, to go a little deeper on that subject.
Yeah. So I was actually having a conversation with several other folks talking about that policy. And, you know, the organization that I'm currently with is around 85% remote employees and telecommuters. And my point, and I don't know if it's 100% valid, but this is how I feel, is if Yahoo has an A player out there that is just killing it every day, you know, respected, does a great job, an innovator, you cannot tell me that they're going to lose that talent because they're not able to telecommute. They're going to find a way. Companies, when they have somebody who's valuable to them, they will find a way. So for me, I really feel like what Yahoo is doing is almost a way of laying off people without laying off people, because they're able to opt out by saying, you know, I want to work from home and I'll find an organization that does so. But if, you know, one of your hypos says, you know what, I still have to work from home, I'm not driving in, they'll find a way to retain that person. So I think I think Marissa has a very good strategy, because instead of putting the word out there on the streets that Yahoo's going to start laying people off, she's really able to spin it into a, you know, I'm giving you the choice of whether you want to telecommute or not, and, you know, understanding that there's exceptions to every rule, and we often make exceptions for our top performers.
Ah, that is a fantastic perspective. I greatly appreciate that. That helps me bring a little more balance into my, you know, into the sanity part of my world. I really had not completely thought about that. That's good. The world's back in balance again. Thank goodness. That's what keeps me up at night. So,
the idea of not being able to telecommute, I think for many people, you know, it's like you're taking away the one perk that they had for being connected via BlackBerry or iPhone or laptop, you know, almost 100% of the time. Once you take that ability away, you've kind of, to me, almost broken that that social contract of we'll let you have more work-life balance, but you're really not going to have all that much because you're still going to be tied to your mobile device.
Yeah, oh my gosh, that social contract, we'll have a whole show on that and have you back in. We might even have a consortium conversation about the social contract. So you're the first person I ever heard use that term, by the way, a few years ago. So,
well, I am a nerd, so that explains a lot.
I couldn't unhear it after that, so it's just stuck with me. So, hey, I'm going to do a quick reset. It's Brian and Nisha on with the amazing Elizabeth Lolly Reese. And so kind of to continue on, what does, you know, when you get into war for talent, I love that term, by the way. That's, I think that was what, a Deloitte term or a McKinsey term. That was a McKinsey term back a few years ago. And so what changes when you start going into that scarcity mode with the social contract?
So to me, kind of what, you know, the getting away from telecommuting is almost counterintuitive, because when there is a war for talent and talent is scarce, especially high quality, high potential talent, you tend to be a little bit more lenient and a little bit more accepting of what talent is looking for. So you may allow them to telecommute all the time if you know that that there's somebody that your organization needs. And so that kind of confused me about, you know, what Yahoo's doing, because whether or not they're going to hold everyone in the organization to that no telecommuting, you're giving talent a very clear, loud message that that they're not going to be able to do that. And so, you know, if telecommuting is part of your lifestyle, why apply? Same with dress codes. I think that, and especially generation that's younger than myself, many of them think that, you know, things like flip-flops or jeans are totally kosher to wear to work. And now it's not. But 20 years from now, when many of them are, you know, running the boardroom, it may be. So I think it's being a little bit more flexible on strategy, being a little bit more flexible on work style, will draw and attract, you know, top-level talent that may be more emerging talent, because that's what we're going to have to look at. There's just no way that 10 years from now we're going to have the number of baby boomers in the workforce that we need to do the big jobs that they're doing today.
Cool, interesting. Well, talking about baby boomers and Gen Y, what are your perspective on, you know, work-life balance? How do these people value work-life balance?
And I guess I think of this almost in terms of my parents and then myself. So, you know, my parents have both been with an employer for 20-plus years. They see work-life balance as something that really doesn't make sense to them. They know that they go to work, they work until the job is done, and then they come home. And it's there's no, well, I want to take a half-day Friday to go to the park. You know, when I tell them things like that, they're like, oh, my gosh, are you sure you can do that? Do you think that's a good idea? They may think that, you know, that you don't care about your job or you don't want to work as hard, where for me, I look at the work that I do, and I know we all do this on the weekend or, you know, when we get home from work on our Blackberries or, you know, conference calls that we may take at 6 a.m. because we've got an East Coast client. So I automatically kind of take that into consideration when I do request time off or work-life balance, because to me, you know, if I'm going to be available for you at any time, which most of us are, you know, I also want to have some time away from the office to take back and to have for myself. And, you know, when I look at my parents, they have a really hard time understanding that. And so, you know, I think that as a workplace and as the world continues to move more towards the work-life balance mindset, I think that organizations are really going to have to focus on how to make work-life balance a real thing and how to market it to potential candidates, because what was important to the baby boomers, which I think a lot of it was around stability and consistency, doesn't seem to be as attractive to like a millennial who may change jobs every 1 to 2 years or may make a move based on not having the work-life balance that they were promised.
Cool. Great, Todd. Well, Lolly, you know, finding the right candidates during a talent shortage requires more than an audit of your, you know, company's job description, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what are some tips to begin with, you know, bridging the talent gap today?
So I think that there are a lot of resources that many organizations don't mine for talent. And one of the sources that I really like to approach and to go after to find talent and to meet people that may be ready for that next step are young professional organizations. I know Dallas has one, Fort Worth has one, many large cities have one, and traditionally it's a networking or network style organization where people meet up and they talk and they may, you know, email each other back and forth about job opportunities, but traditionally those are more of the more ambitious and socially connected people that are looking for the next big opportunity. I also really like affinity groups, and I've actually found a lot of very talented and very engaged individuals through groups on LinkedIn. And I know that sounds very simplistic, but, you know, if I go in and I start looking at profiles in a affinity group for, let's say, like Six Sigma or something like that, I'm probably going to find people who are really interested in what I'm looking for, but they're also people that I think will, you know, will be interested in my organization, because with, you know, it's not anything work-related. They're going out on their own time, engaging in these groups on, like in LinkedIn, and trying to learn more, even though it's not, you know, directly related to their 9-to-5. So anywhere where people gather, where they're trying to increase their knowledge or their mind share, I love going places like that to meet them, because those are the type of people that will that will be interested in taking that next step. And, you know, the attraction of saying, hey, you know, we have somebody, our CFO is going to be retiring probably in the next, you know, 3 to 5 years, and we're looking for someone to take the next step. There's going to be a learning curve here. Are you willing? Are you interested? They're 9 times out of 10 going to say, yes, I am, because they're already interested in furthering their own knowledge and their career. So I think there's a lot of opportunities out there, not to just throw a milquetoast job description out there and, you know, hope that the person that you're looking for will just stumble upon it.
Great. Well, actually, you're a person who worked in diverse industries like telecom and then retail industry. So how does talent acquisition differ from telecom industry to retail industry?
So I think one of the most interesting things, especially about working within retail, was how to identify talent. And that was something that during my time in multi-unit retail, I found really fun and interesting, because most of the talent that we would pursue or that we would attract would be people who would come into the multi-unit retail establishments. And so with hiring retail folks, we had really great results with text-to-apply type applications to QR codes, where people, when they were in one of our establishments, would be able to scan to learn more about jobs. And really it was selling the experience of first being a customer and seeing the way that the organization worked and interacting with customer service professionals, but then seeing themselves in that role. So, you know, I would never say it's like shooting fish in a barrel, because, I mean, it's obviously still challenging, especially with the high rates of turnover that most retail organizations face. But you were able to find people where they would go to do business. and have a pipeline of people that may be interested in working for your organization. I think something that's a little bit different about working in technology is, you know, especially if you're not working for a customer, specifically a customer or public-facing organization, you know, people want to work for Facebook. People want to work for Google. People want to work for Yahoo because they're names that they recognize. They've got some level of social stature to them. But there are so many really great technology companies who don't have that, either the Silicon Valley credibility or that aren't necessarily sexy brands to work for. And when you have an opportunity like that, it's really about getting the real mission of the company across and talking about commitment to innovation and technology and the ability to work on bleeding edge rather than working on, working on legacy products and technology. And so it's a very different approach. It's a very interesting approach. But, you know, I think that whether you're looking at retail or looking at, doing recruitment around technology, it's figuring out who your audience is and figuring out where your high potentials that you currently have, where they came from, and what attracted them to your organization, and then trying to replicate that success. I think for any organization, that's a good path to take.
Cool. Well, we have about 2 minutes left, but a very quick question. What skills outside of, HR profession will be the most important for HR pros to acquire to ensure future success?
So I think that for HR professionals, things that specific skills that I would suggest to be successful and to be able to continue to grow within your career is, A, really understanding the business that you support. I've learned from some amazing managers of my own that before you try to go in and make any changes, before you even try to sit down and talk about, succession planning, you need to understand the business. You need to understand the challenges. You need to understand the market that you're facing when you're talking about talent and talking about the organization. So having business savvy and understanding what EBITDA is and being able to talk the talk is really important. And so if you're like me, I was a political science major, law school, didn't really have a business background. I've really had to do a lot of self-studying on business and finance to make sure that I can understand when I am in the boardroom with the operations team or finance professionals, that I can understand what's going on and actually contribute. So I think that's really important. I would say that's probably, to me, the most important thing that an HR professional can do to be successful, because then you're really a business partner. You can talk about distribution. You can talk about the market. You can talk about, where the organization, look at a balance sheet. I think if you have that and you can pair it with a strong HR skill set, then you're 99% of the way there to being successful anywhere you go.
Well, thank you for that great insight, Lolly. Well, so where can people connect you, come and find you? What are your travel plans for this year?
So I will definitely be at SHRM in Chicago, and I'm excited for that in June, and we'll be attending HR Tech. Wasn't able to go last year, really excited to go this year. If people would like to connect with me, they can reach me at Lolly, Lalli, at txstrategichr.com. Visit my blog at txstrategichr.com, and love to hear from people, and certainly would love to hear if anybody is out there is doing contingency planning for the baby boomers' retirement. Would love to hear from you as well.
Thank you, Lolly. Thank you so much for being here today. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you all have a wonderful weekend, and thank you all for listening to Drive Through HR.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Lolly. Thank you, Brian. And thank you, William, wherever you are.